Hello and welcome to yet another video on the YouTube channel of Rethink Peer-to-Peer Kredite. My name is Danny Neithardt and today I'm joined with Mikael Stamm, who is COO and member of the board at Estate Guru. Hi, Mikael.
Hello.
How are you doing? Here. What's the situation like in Tallinn right now?
I think Tallinn overall has been, or Estonia overall has been, not so disrupted by the urban times, so we have throughout time we have had the lowest rating in the virus spread, but still it's now speeding up a little bit, so I think the next weeks will show in which direction it goes. So but I think overall it's quite similar as it's everywhere in Europe and even world.
Recently had a conversation also with Kadri, focusing a little bit more on some of the community questions regarding Estate Guru. I don't know, maybe you have seen it, although it was in German. I don't know how good your German is, if you were able to follow up on those questions and those topics. Whereas today I would prioritize a bit more a broader view and the scope on Estate Guru, like how has 2020 been affecting the business, obviously. Where are you at this point in time, and also like what are things to look ahead for then for next year? So a lot of topics to discuss potentially, but first of all, maybe you can just start by giving a very quick introduction about yourself. I know that you joined Twino almost 4 years ago. What has been your personal, your professional background prior starting at Estate Guru, and what are you currently doing now
at Estate Guru? Yeah, currently, as you said, I'm part of the management board. So, but my main focus at the moment is running the existing markets. So look over the operations, and parallelly also looking over the product and IT developments. So but that on day-to-day basis, like contributing to the management work and then overall looking all the areas. So, so it's just, but my background is actually from the banking sector. So there I had different roles from sales to business operations to even some parts of the technology and product development. So and to the really high level as well. So I think here at the Estate Guru we have a quite good mix of people. So the main founders have the really long history in real estate, know it throughout, and have gone through different cycles. So, and we have also really good people in risk knowledge, and then of course the IT. So it's all the necessary components to really succeed in our vision to really disrupt and to make the real estate, short-term real estate financing accessible.
Interesting. Yeah, obviously, you personally, just a quick follow-up question. Back then, 4 years ago, did you felt like, okay, Estate Guru sounds like a very interesting enterprise to join, or have you been approached by Estate Guru? How did that happen?
Yeah. So in this sense, yeah, I wasn't the main founder, but I joined quite in the beginning, because then when I joined, we just had gone to Latvia, our first expansion. So, but I think it was less than 10 people in the team still. So now we have grown to already 50 person, and the structure what we have been changing is been huge, and now we are kind of ready to even go further. So, but. Interesting, I was an investor before I joined the team. So, but once Marek approached me, then we found a common understanding, and I saw that it aligns really well with my own vision and interest, and I really liked that I believed in this vision that we can really make an impact in Europe and in the world, that changes, and this was a really interesting challenge for me, and then I saw that the background what I have is also really needed in the company, that I could bring some really big additional value for the team, and actually so therefore combining all the components what we have in the management team today already, which is even now further expanded, then I think it's a good mixture of different knowledges and experiences.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so we learned your investor yourself, obviously, of Estate Guru. Even prior, you joined the company, and prior Marek has been approaching you. Very interesting. Now let's dive right into the topic that probably a lot of investors are concerned about, you know, the effects, obviously, of the pandemic. Maybe from your perspective, you know, as you said, being responsible for the operational side, you know, what would you say how Estate Guru has been affected as a company by COVID-19 in general?
Yeah, of course. I think in the beginning of the April, May, it was really affecting us as well. So we had to make adjustments. We communicated also and throughout different webinars. So we made some cost reduction, etc. But I think this happened for everyone. Like there was an uncertain time. So everybody will think, okay, what now happens? But overall, what we can say now is that for us, it really worked well, because we have rolled out really well out of this. So recent months we have done record months. So now we're really again investing into the growth of the company, hiring new people, expanding to new countries, and this is supported by the really good sales results what we are bringing month to month. So we also saw that the things what we have been doing and really thought as important things to do, being transparent and to really think ahead two steps at what happens when regulation comes, or what happens when something like this happens, and all the things what we did as a already before, these have been helping us to now paying the dividends, or let's say paying the interest and saying in our terms. So because probably also the investor community saw that only the high interest is not something that you should pursue, and you really need to look into what is a company. And I think this year has shown that what are the companies who can survive the crisis time, what are the products or the product offerings, what are good for different times, and etc. So yeah, it has been a really interesting time. Tough, lot of work, definitely, and a lot of stress. But at the same time, with every crisis, there lays an opportunity, and we like to think of that. We are pushing into this opportunity side.
Mm. Now, you mentioned a lot of interesting points. I will pick one after the other now out from your initial statement. So let's start off with cost reduction. I think it's also a webinar that I have to say that I followed a lot of the external communication of Estate Guru in March and April. And I think it was also a webinar during this time when I think also you made the statement, okay, as a effect due to pandemic, we decided to reduce or to cut costs by 30%. Can you elaborate a bit, where exactly did you cut costs, in which specific areas? Question number one. And second question, already following up, what is the status as of now? So how are you planning as of this point in time? Now we have obviously some sort of the vaccine on the horizon, but at the same time, we see an increasing level of positive pandemic cases and some sort of a second wave. So first of all, where did you cut costs? And secondly, what is the status for planning as of now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we a little bit also discussed then where the areas, but overall, yeah, our main, what we wanted to achieve is that we're not letting anyone down. Like we're not doing that, hey, let's now cut off half of people and try to survive. So as we didn't know what will happen, then step by step, we started to try to find ways where we can cut the cost, of course, a little bit lower the marketing budget, IT resources. Also, we put on hold some of the investments, like going, for example, Germany earlier or these kind of things. So, and we put on hold some of the new hirings, what we had planned, so etc. So with this help, and then at one point we again decided that, okay, what do we do now? So are we letting people go, or are we as a responsible company that really want to come through as a team through this difficult time. Then we had to some period also the cut it salaries for everyone. So we decided that okay, we treat everyone as equal. So at some months we had also this, but luckily, as I said, we came out quite quickly. It helped us actually to kind of push into different revenue streams as well. So even in May, we saw that even, for example, sales dropped around 50% compared to the previous month and to previous years even. But at the same time, the profit, revenue only dropped around 30%. So this has benefited us as well. So and overall, as a company, we have been like really cautious in our budgeting as well. We're not going like we're not like a traditional startup like going crazy in cost base and trying to maximize as much, invest all the money or like this. But we are more into like, yes, we take a strategic investment. With this investment, we make certain things, and these certain things should bring us to profitability. A good example of this was 2019, when we partnered up with one of the biggest fintech investments in Europe, Speed Invest. So they came in with one million. So throughout the year, this was invested into different areas, to IT, to the key employees, to expansion, and all this investment actually paid off. And already in beginning of this year, we were already again making profit from month to month. So okay, this changed again a little bit, but this is how we're thinking. Like, all investments should bring us to profitability, and we need to be self-sufficient. So if we're not taking, for example, additional investment, then we should be covering our cost like this.
Hmm.
So, but coming then to the second question, how we see today, I think already with the like second wave, it is different. So I think, like looking overall, I think companies are more prepared, the people are more prepared. Yes, there are sectors which are kind of affected by this, but at the same time, people are able to work in this new environment, go home, and job gets done. So it's not putting so much pressure on the market itself. But for us, it's also like a little bit different. As I say, we have in recent months, we have been doing record sales. It's not the real estate crisis. It's a little bit different crisis. So houses are still built. People still want to have new apartments, for example, buy things. Maybe they're not pushing so much into the development, but still things are being done. So, and as a company, yes, we are continue looking the eye on cost. So making our investments cautious, but still investing into the growth. And at the same time, we have this quite a good cash reserves, and it was also like additionally increased in the toughest time during April and May, when we had the Cedars campaign. So there we raised additional 1 million to our cash balance. So, but as the sales results have been increasing quite well, then we haven't had need to go into these reserves actually that much.
So what I can take out from this is that from still obviously there's a look at costs that are involved surrounding expansion, but at the same time you feel like okay, we're in a position now where we can also fuel the growth and continue to expand and move forward with a conservative approach of growing, I would say. Not, as you said, not massively scaling and overly investing, living over your standards, but at the same time you consider yourself back on track on continuing to grow now.
Yeah, I think it showed to a lot of companies that even these like highly fueled startups it was made clear to them that they need to increase their profitability and reduce the burn rate as such. So, so yeah, you need to make cautious risks. So, but you can't stay in the same as well, because then other competition is coming and taking your market position.
Yeah. Quick follow-up question. I didn't want to fall into your statement and your answer regarding the salary cut. Was it like a flat cut that, you know, all staff salary has been reduced by X percent? I don't know, maybe 30%. Or did management say in particular we're taking a bigger cut from our wages? Or can you go a bit more specific here? What the salary cut exactly means, and who and how it was affected then for the employees?
We decided to have it like to equal principle, so it was like quite flat for everyone.
Flat, okay. But you don't want to go into the specifics?
Yeah, I think this is better not to go into too detail in this stuff as well. So it was communicated like internally to everyone how we do it. Everyone know what, how is everyone treated, and this was the main like key here also to explain how the business is doing internally. We had meetings week to week, basically telling what is the situation and what is our aim, and we try to be also internally really transparent about the things, so everyone knows what is happening and etc. But luckily, there was actually we had opportunity to use the there was a kind of different packages put up by the governments countries where we operate. So we were able to actually cover some of the salaries through these packages as well. So this helped, and I think the governments what did this are looking from retrospective. It was a good measure to implement and to allow this for the companies.
All right. Thank you for this. One last aspect maybe to follow up also from your initial statement, transparency, communication. Now, I, from my personal impression, have witnessed that in general, for a bit more than a year now, Estate Guru is more and more actively in communicating with its investors, being more transparent, starting from regular blog posts, but as well through webinars, through Q&A sessions, which have been hold up permanently, especially during this weirdly foreseen time then in March and April. Do you think this, I don't know if it's just a subjective impression, has this been something that has been, you know, specifically on the agenda? And do you think that's also one of the key reasons why Estate Guru was able to maintain a lot of trust from investors? Because when we look at the numbers, new signed up investors every month, as well as the loan volume, I think Estate Guru was able to very quickly overcome this liquidity crisis that we have witnessed in some peer-to-peer platforms as well as crowdfunding platforms. What can you say to that?
In this sense, yeah, transparency has been in the core from the beginning, and we have a heavy like discussion on the management team as well, like how can we and should we do that, and then eventually we again like, hey, we want to be transparent, and yeah, let's show the defaults and let's show the portfolio, and let's not be afraid, like even if somebody is like telling, hey, you have some defaults, like then you tell, yeah, but this comes with the business, and then you explain, and then this puts actual pressure for yourself as well, that you need to perform well and to live the expectation. So I think, yeah, and we were actually one of the first ones to start doing the audited annual reports and publishing in the web page. I think we were one of the first ones to actually publishing the monthly portfolio overviews, and not showing the only how, hey, this was a good result, sales results, but actually showing that, hey, we have also defaults and I don't know, loss of capital. Okay, we haven't had yet, but still how the recoveries are happening, and to really to show and to have these loan updates where you show that okay, these are, this is happening like this, and etc. So, and at the same time, from the beginning, we like even though there wasn't need to be regulated in the countries, but for example, we voluntarily went to the Lithuania, Finland, and tried to get the regulation there, even though there's not yet this pan-European regulation yet, which is now approved and now the countries are implementing, but it still takes 1 to 2 years to really go live for the companies. So yeah, I think during the crisis we just delivered increased the level of communication, but I think there's a no such a thing like over communication, so you could do it even more and more. So we also see that there are areas where we could improve and do better, so we are setting ourselves a really high standards too in this segment. And yes,
okay,
so let's hopefully talk. Hopefully it helps to build the trust, and then we see as a big component of building the trust, and hopefully the investor who use our platform value it, and we are also thankful for all the investors who are sharing their feedback where we could improve. So you can't be perfect in all the areas, so the question remains that if you get the feedback, what you're doing with it, do you ignore it, or you tell you don't know, or you actually work it through and you become better. And if you have the mindset of continuously becoming better, then I think then you have the advantage of being the great player in the market.
Mm. Let's dive a bit more into the development of the real estate market. Now, you mentioned in the beginning you are like an investor yourself. I assume you continue also to invest some portion also then through Estate Guru. How do you currently, you said also like this has not been a real estate crisis. How would you say as of this very moment, is the risk reward ratio for investors going into the real estate market?
Mm-hmm. Like I think our like long term aim is that whoever you have in your business portfolio, then actually you should have some small portion of real estate backed loans in your portfolio, for investment portfolio. So overall, we see that this is being as a vision that everyone who is doing saving or making their investment, they also parallel to the I don't know real estate or stocks or bonds, they also have some share of real estate back loans. So not all, sure, of course, because then it's not goes against the diversification rules, but and why? Because that actually what we have shown throughout the years that this kind of product can bring you quite a steady low risk is always with every investment, but we will still consider our real estate back loans as a low risk investment product, so and at the same time bringing quite a good steady return. So looking at the real estate market itself, yes, I think there's a always opportunity to enter the market and whatever it is. And in our case, it started with the last crisis, the real estate crisis, the product itself. So we kind of feel and see that this product is quite good for the turbulent times. So whatever it is, like, and even this year's kind of show that it is able to survive this more turbulent times as well, because what you have always this real estate as a collateral, even though if the, for example, the value of the real estate is reducing, then you still have some kind of real asset that you can sell and liquidate and get your money back through that. Yes, it might take maybe longer in more turbulent times, or if, for example, it hits the real estate market, then it might take longer and maybe there's some kind of bigger discount what you need to do, but still you're not going directly to your into the principal amount. So I don't know if it's answered, but from looking from economical situation, as I mentioned a bit earlier as well, and as long as people have their jobs, and I think what has happened now is that the jobs have a little bit shifted, so you can easily work from home and then still get your salary working like this. You don't need to go to the office. So yes, there are sectors which are kind of have their problems. For example, yes, all this leisure and travel and all this industries is in problem, but this is not all of the market and job workforce. So in parallel, you see all the other areas what are booming. For example, people are renovating their homes, buying stuff for home and all that. So yeah. So the money is moving in different directions. And at the same time, what we could also see that maybe people are still maybe not going traveling, but they're buying, for example, villa near the seaside and having their going out of the weekends to that places, or so sure. The developer can develop there, or people buying bigger apartments to have one room for their home office, for example. So
yeah, we see that. No, I think like the underlying question for me here, maybe I have to be more precise. I'm sorry for that. Is especially like considering risk reward ratio in this turbulent times. Obviously, we understand like that, you know, there is, you know, always homes or you know, there's always a place to stay needed, whether it's retail, whether it's for private people, whether it's for commercial reasons. But I think the underlying fear many had was also, okay, if we're driving into a recession, and I think it's still not for granted that, you know, this will not be the case in the future, maybe 2021, how secure are assets and how secure are the underlying assets? And basically the value that is within properties, have you to some extent also re-evaluated the value of those properties? Have you adjusted the risk assessment? I know that there was a couple of adjustments that you made, like focusing more on urban areas, for instance. But maybe you can talk a bit how you adjusted a bit the risk assessment and also the re-evaluation of your properties, considering that there might be a crisis coming up, that there might be a recession that as a result could also massively lower the value of those securities.
So yeah, in this sense, it's like this is a continuous work what our risk department is doing, like monitoring the market situation and making these adjustments based on the markets, what they see, what is the trend. So during yes, April, May, there was more severe measures taken, so we really reviewed whom we give and how we give. So some of the segments were removed, for example, yeah, all this kind of travel industry parts was more stricter, and also we lowered a little bit loan to value offering, so more conservative in this sense. But during the summer we again a little bit also went more maybe what's the correct word for risk tolerant in some of the segments. So I think our like risk manager would be able to go really into the details and explain you how we do it on daily basis. But maybe the main message from my side is that this is monitored by all the time, and we are also doing some small adjustments based on the market. So, and again, maybe one comment about the again market situation is that why it seems at the moment that even though if the recession comes, then I think from it's not that long from the previous time, and the message from, let's say, 2008 and 2009, then the message what were taken then by the European kind of regulators and on the local regulations. So I think in this sense, the real estate market and the banking environment is much more healthier. So banks don't have so much bubble inside of their portfolios. And then actually all the real estate developers who went through the last time are now more prepared. So what they do is actually they just maybe postpone some of the projects. They're not going, I don't know, building, let's say, 10 apartments parallelly, but maybe they're building 5 apartment buildings at the same time, maybe postponing some of the projects. But what it means that the demand and the supply remains in a similar level. So this then means that the prices are not so much affected. So again, I say, till there's people are have their jobs and getting the salaries, and there's always demand for the real estate. So, but that doesn't mean that everyone should make their own corrections in their portfolios. So, if you have a good arguments that you see that something is might happen, then of course you need to adjust your portfolio based on your own risk and reward ratios, as you see suitable.
Okay. I want to talk about the pipeline of new projects for Estate Guru. I took a note that back in April this year, I don't know if it was you, but it was communicated that the pipeline for new projects within the next 12 months would be around 40 million euro. How big is the pipeline right now, and is there maybe also specific markets where you feel especially comfortable to expand? Now, in the previous record month, we have seen half of the 15 million euro went to Lithuania. So maybe you can comment on this as well, please.
I think in the Lithuanian case, it's kind of a little bit cumulative result as well. So some of the deals from the previous month were accumulating into that month, and this helped to increase. But overall, yeah, we see kind of increase in sales. One part from the existing markets what we had in traditionally the Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, but it was also as we now finally, like officially open the Finnish market with a local regulation and all that. So we see actually a Finnish market pipeline building up quite well, and soon we can have more news from Germany as well, because the country manager is in place, and we are now finalizing all the last bits and pieces to be fully live to go with the bigger volumes and then start originating. So yeah, I think the pipeline for the upcoming months have built up really well. So we hope to end this year around 120 million, so which is maybe not what we expected in the beginning of year. So we wanted even to do double from the last year, which was 80 million. So at least 160, but even more, we aim to do 200 million, and we were in the traction. But we are then April, May, which is a bit lower, and then we readjusted our target. So now we aim to around 40 to 50% increase compared to the previous year, and I think in this environment it's a quite a greater achievement. But looking ahead, then definitely the growth increase will come from the bigger markets where we now have entered, Finland, Germany, and next year we will be focusing on opening at least 1 to 2 new countries as operationally. So we might be continue doing this kind of more cross-border deals as we did in Sweden recently, and maybe Spain and some other countries where we have the legal structure ready, but we don't have operations yet. But we get lot of leads around Europe, so we are really choosing the places where we know that we have everything in place and we can adjust the risk accordingly.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I think one of the most compliant crowdfunding businesses, you always make sure you have all the licenses put together and in place when you do business in the respective countries. Definitely something that people can observe with Estate Guru. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about maybe what could fuel the growth of Estate Guru even a bit more next year, which could be institutional investors. Now, in 2019, it was roughly 10% of the loan volume that has been funded through institutional investors. This year, it was planned to increase that number to a range of 30 to 40%. What do the actual numbers say? First question. And, why does Estate Guru have the tendency to shift more towards institutional investors now?
Mm-hmm. So... Yeah, I think COVID affected a little bit this area as well. So we hope to onboard some of the new institutional investors much quicker, but it has prolonged the negotiations. But we're having quite a nice negotiations with really big institutions and funds around Europe. So, but still, it remains around 10%. But why it's strategically
10% this year?
Yes. So it has remained similar to the previous years, but as the volumes grow, then actually the total amounts have been increasing. So, why it remains critical strategically and also what it means for the retail investors, I think this is both beneficial for the business, but also investors. And what I mean by this is that we see that as we are growing in volumes, then this also increases the demand for capital. So to speed up this growth, then institutional products suit quite well here, that they can come in and bring more volume to you. But what it means also for retail is that we really, still in our strategy, we really see the retail as a really important part of our business model. So, but what it allows is, for example, today, if we would need to put 5 million loan into the platform, it will be, takes a lot of time and it will be complicated to quickly fill it up. But for example, if we would have more institutional lines available, it would mean that we could, let's say, I don't know, put 50% or 60% of institutional and then keep enough volume
space for retail investors. Yeah.
Yes, and what it means that actually it helps you to diversify the portfolio and further and to get access to the deals that otherwise you wouldn't be able. It's like 5 million. It's only banks, for example, or something like really big investors. But now you could go with the 50 euros and still get a part of the really big projects, and then this is like democratizing the investment portfolio and opportunities, and at the same time then you could access to different borrowers as well and all that. So there's a lot of additional value coming out of this for all sides.
Yeah, so probably also with a bigger amount of funds through institutional investors, Estate Guru may have even probably issues to allocate this to the loan portfolio, as the pipeline is probably not as big as it's supposed to be to really serve then all interests from institutional to retail investors. That is at least what I'm hearing out from your statement.
Well, it's always for us a chicken and egg in this sense. We are parallel working on both ends. So having the product in a shop and at the same time having the visitors in the shops.
Yeah. At the same time, maybe the question you know, on one side, you know, real estate loans are considered to be more stable, more safe, probably with less margin, lower returns, but definitely with a safer background. Now we have seen a lot of people in the beginning of 2020 being a bit more frightened, wanted to place their assets more into secure or their funds more in secure assets. Now we have seen retail investors came to that conclusion very quickly in terms of Estate Guru, but maybe, you know, was there some sort of barrier or which requirements couldn't be met from institutional side to not just, you know, use that opportunity in terms of for Estate Guru to fuel or to keep up with growth plans by injecting some funds through institutional investors?
The thing is, I think with the institutional, there's a lot of like, it's a long process to really set up the partnership. So, and in these turbulent times, it's even longer because they want to make sure all the kind of due diligence and all the things what they need to be sure. And at the same time, they might have their own house in burning and to really look where they're going and what they're doing. So, but I think what we have seen, and also for the institutional investors, we have had really good partnership already evolving throughout the years, and step by step, we're also getting more attractive to institutions because through our originations, where we are with the countries, but at the same time with the volumes, so all this is also working out really well for them as well. So, this is how we see it at the moment. I don't know if fully answered, but.
So a lengthy due diligence process, then, you know, it's not like, obviously, you know, like the immediate snap that retail investors do. Okay, I pull back my money, I invest. Obviously, I understand there is a different setup required for institutional investors. Maybe to finish off this chat.
Maybe one more comment. So what actually also beneficial for the retail investor is that if they have a platform which is supported by institutional, so I think this is kind of an extra layer of security, because it shows that these institutions are going through, like I said, they're heavy due diligence of the platform. So they look all the portfolio, all the process, all the people, everything is screened and made the decision based on that. So if you see that the platform is just having institutional, then it shows that there's a big trust onto this company as well.
Sure, absolutely. And that's why exactly my question. So maybe, you know, why hasn't there been no additional institutional investors, especially this year? Maybe Estate Guru hasn't been their number one priority to allocate funds into property-backed assets, secured, collateralized assets. So that's exactly the background of my question. So maybe if you would have kept up with the promise or the expectation to deliver 30-40% of that loan volume through institutional funds, then maybe, you know, this could have been also an additional layer of, wow, you know, like even now the big players are fully into the system of Estate Guru and how they operate. So that's exactly the kind of point I was trying to make.
Yeah, but maybe my comment still here is that it's not that there's no interest. We only see the increase in interest, but the main the bottleneck here was the timing. Let's say we have like discussions going on different institutional funds from Scandinavia to France to Germany to UK to Switzerland. So, and we are now actually building up our own capital team as well. So there's a little bit shift in the team setup as well. So.
I have one last question. Yeah. One last question. Sorry.
Time is maybe the main answer here.
Okay. Just one last question to finish off this topic with institutional investors. I know obviously you have already some that work closely with Estate Guru. Can you reveal a bit some details about how in general the collaboration structure looks like. So at which funding volume, for instance, does it start? And when do you say, okay, considering this volume, it makes sense to set up a collaboration, more or less? Do we talk about a guaranteed length of a collaboration period, saying like, okay, we invest X amount for a time period of Z years? Or can you just give a few details on how those collaboration details are structured with institutional investors?
Yeah, of course, there are like different structures what we're able to provide for the institutional. So, but for example, some of the collaboration what we have now, it's and usually also with different structure, it's quite similar, let's say, to the retail investor. I would say that the retail investors, everyone of us have our own kind of investment strategies as well. That okay, I would like to go to these and these countries, maybe not to go into that product. Mm-hmm. And the same actually applies to institutions. So each of them have their own kind of portfolio where they would like to build, for example, this in this country, maybe this kind of deals and etc. So basically kind of set up the auto invest for them that and start dividing their money into the projects which fill their criteria. So parallel together with the retail, they are making these investments. So this is like one example of how it's set up.
Okay, so maybe they have expectations. We only want to invest in certain specific loans in certain countries. But can you say like at which funding volume a collaboration usually starts? Is that 500,000 euro? Is that 1 million? Or what are we talking about?
Again, different. You can, with a smaller place, you can talk about like 5 to 10 million, but different appetites, different levels. So they are the institution who will tell, okay, I won't start talking to you before, I don't know, you are able to do 50 million per month or something like this. So again, yeah, this is like really developed ecosystem of that. And
sure, but Estate Guru itself, do you as a company say, you know, like unless we're talking about at least 5 million euro, it doesn't make sense for us to set up a structure? Or when does it start?
Yeah, for us, it's also some criteria. Like otherwise, we will tell it, hey, let's kick it off, for example, that you just try it out on the platform. And if you want more tailored solution, then there's certain amounts what you need to.
So you can't communicate a specific number?
At the moment, yeah, I will be a little bit cautious about that.
Okay, I see. We're coming towards an end. Let's talk a bit about, you know, just quickly about the outlook, about the future. You know, obviously considering the difficult environment businesses have been in this year, I think Estate Guru showed quite a stable position, and I think was still to this extent growing to a good level, I would say, from the outside perspective. How satisfied are you personally looking at the position of Estate Guru this year? What would be like your overall conclusion first of, you know, looking at 2020?
Mm. I like saying straight away, then we're really like the team is always like pushing and trying to do better and better. And if you're like, not going like extra mile, then you think, okay, was it good enough? And did we do well? But then you sometimes feel like, okay, we should have done even more. But again, like trying to push this growth mindset a little bit further, then looking back to the year, then I think we can be really happy about results and I'm really grateful that actually investors who have joined the platform also see that this is a good place to come. So we have we end the year again with a growth in investors in portfolio. We have kept the portfolio in good shape. So looking at defaults, then it is in an accepted level what we have set ourselves. So everything, and we went through the hardest months and being able to grow after that. So overall, I think it has been a great year and a great foundation for the upcoming years, what we want to achieve and do.
Okay, let's look at the immediate future. 2021 is right ahead. What can people and what can investors in particular expect from SEGURO next year?
Overall, yeah, we want to continue bringing good investment opportunities. What can expect is to have even more diversification because new countries are coming up, so you can diversify between countries. There are several interesting product features being built, which will be launched. One of them probably already end of this year, and some of things will take longer, and we will expect to implement during next year. There will be some kind of updates on the visual views of the platform to make it even more better and convenient for the investors. So, and parallel, yeah, on the background, there's a lot of like work done on the background when we look about product wise. So to make it even more scalable and efficient for the growth in the upcoming years. So, so yeah, we're working parallel on different streams. Bringing new countries, continue bringing new deals with a good return, and parallel improve the products. So, and again, like we have said always, please come with your ideas, and we also try to execute as much as possible of this feedback.
All right. So we understood geographic expansion is coming next year, as well as some new product features. We're all excited for it. Thank you very much for your time, Mikael. Any last words or last comment from your side?
I think in today's environment, it's always stay healthy and continue investing.
All right.
Not only SEGURO, but making yourself that you have some kind of reserves to live through the turbulent times.
All right. Thank you very much for your time and for your answers, Mikael.
Okay, thank you.